Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Four Seasons Fire American Soccer Show. Tonight, we are reviewing the CONCACAF Champions Cup Round of 16 Second Leg Review. And joining me right away, a man that is happy because on aggregate, the New England Revolution did what they had to do. They advanced, defeating Alajuelense of Costa Rica 5-1 in aggregate after a 1-1 draw in the second leg from the Blazing Musket. Once again, Sam Minton joining me tonight. Sam, good evening and welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan. You know, as they say, survive in advance, and the Revs built that lead up in Gillette, and they were able to survive down in Costa Rica. So off to the next round they go.
Now, absolutely, and it's a great time to be a Revolution supporter, seeing them advancing past a very tough – well, we'll say this. Normally, they are a tough side in Costa Rica in their first division, and obviously the managing change did look like it might have been a bit nervy after the opening 4 minutes when that goal was converted by Carlos Mora. But under Alexander Guimaraes, of course, the former Costa Rican national team manager and well-known across circles of Costa Rican football, I thought that the Revolution were going to have themselves a tough nut to crack. But still, though, it was just really too much for Costa Rican side Alajuelense to try to compensate and overtake.
Yeah, you know, definitely, you know, that first goal early on really had Revolution fans nervous. It almost seemed like it was going to be flashbacks of that Pumas match, but luckily they were able to buckle down. But I will say, Caleb Porter was very complimentary of the new Alajuelense manager, and it really seems like, you know, he impressed Porter in the sense that the side just looked completely different. They looked revitalized, and that Alajuelense just, you know, looked basically more motivated and bought in. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress with a new head coach, but they won't be doing that in a CONCACAF Champions Cup.
No, absolutely not. And, I mean, look, we give them credit. At least the club did – it looks like they did the right thing. They changed managers. They had to bring in somebody to re-motivate those players. But I think the Revs really showed a lot of class because – they could have been like, uh-oh, we're in for a long 90 minutes here, but not so. Caleb Porter, I think, got his tactics right, even though you would love to have seen a goal earlier in the first half to maybe kill off the match. But still, though, Alajuelense just could not break through after opening the scoring in that fourth minute.
Yeah, obviously, I don't know if it's exactly the most, you know, intriguing or fun match to watch because obviously Caleb Porter just kind of had it set up where the Revs were going to bunker down. If they were going to kind of go on the attack, it would be on the counter. You saw numerous chances, but they were unable to really put it away. And then once you bring in Giacomo Brioni, big goal for him, his first goal on the road since joining New England, and, you know, his first goal of the season, which is a big one considering his struggles, you're able to kind of break through and, you know, like you said, kill the game away. So, again, not really the most fun match to watch, but they got the job done, and, you know, Caleb Porter went with a plan, and the plan seemed to work.
Yep, it really did. I have to say this, though. I thought Henrique Ravas had to be on his game in this one. I thought he made some really spectacular saves, mostly late in the first half where Alajuelense was really revving up and really peppering his goal and inside his area. What did you think about Ravas' performance and goal there for the Revs last night?
Yeah, I definitely think, you know, he had a solid performance. You know, when it comes to the goal, a lot of European keepers are taught to kind of punch compared to catch, and also to Ryan Spalding didn't have the best defensive effort there, so it's really hard to blame him. But like you said, he was able to make some good saves, and I think after the Atlanta game where, you know, so many goals were allowed, he needed a get-right game, so I think this is exactly that. He's also going to be riding a high of he got called up to the Slovakian national team. So the Revolution are going to miss him in the match after this Sunday's match against Cincy. But overall, should be a good confidence booster. And then now you just hope in that match against Cincy, you know, he's able to have a much better performance.
I thought Andrew Farrell, and I mean, you know, the veteran that he is, always an excellent wing back to go out there to, you know, help out the back line as much as possible. I thought he was dictating everything on that back line, telling them where to go, also defending very well himself. We all know the type of defender he is. I thought he was actually having himself a great evening of telling the defenders where to be and how to do it.
Yeah, you know, he's that guy in the locker room who's going to be the leader. He's been in New England for so long. So he definitely, no matter if he's playing right back or center back, he's going to be that leader. It seems like Kyle Porter sort of views him more as a right back, or maybe, you know, that's just due to, you know, injuries and whatnot, obviously Brandon Bye being out. But it seems like we've seen a lot of Farrell at right back, and, you know, when perfectly healthy, you know, do you see Farrell, Kessler, and Romney kind of back there along with DeJuan Jones out wide? So definitely going to be interesting to see how Farrell does in this kind of new role. Nick Lima has kind of popped off. You know, he had that great goal against Toronto. So overall, it's going to be really really interesting to see, you know, what the team is able to do, and especially Andrew Farrell's role moving forward.
Absolutely, and we'll see what happens going down the line. And, of course, right now, Caleb Porter is off to a fantastic start here in CONCACAF Champions Cup play, so we'll see what happens now in your next matchup against Club America. We'll get to that in a moment. But overall, you know, what else did you see from this Revolution side that you liked? Obviously, no goals after the fourth minute. That's always a positive. But, you know, what did you think Caleb Porter learned from this matchup against Alajuelense in both legs?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, looking at the most recent match, Caleb Porter was just able to see that his team is able to put in a professional effort and kind of, you know, do the job. And, you know, they were able to go out with this plan of, all right, we have this lead. We just have to make sure that we do not allow a ton of goals like what happened in Pumas, and that we're not just completely bunkering. Obviously, you're going to want to bunker and kind of, you know, absorb the pressure from Alajuelense. But also, too, you want to be able to create chances on the counter. And I think, you know, they were able to do that. They just were lacking that finishing touch. So in terms of, you know, learning things, I don't know if there's exactly a whole lot that you're able to learn from a game like that where you just go in with a plan and you have such a large aggregate lead that you can afford to sit back. But I think he did see that, you know, the players are able to do just that, see out a game, see out a victory. And then again, now you just hope returning to league play that you can kind of string things together and kind of get the regular season back on track.
No, absolutely, and that's the hope there for every Revolution supporter, that they get back on track, and hope for the club to get back to where they were at about, what, 2 years ago when they were on a roll and destroying every opponent they had on their regular season and winning that supporter shield. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully that'll be the Caleb Porter era to start off with. And now, of course, you're facing Club America from Liga MX. Originally, that first leg was supposed to be at the Estadio Azteca, but unfortunately, it sounds like there's been a scheduling snafu. Just explain to us why the Revolution have to play that first leg at Gillette this upcoming April.
Yeah, so it appears that, you know, there's not really a lot of events. There's like some almost like trade show that's being held there, but that's just being held in the Putnam Club, so it's pretty, I would say, unreasonable to think that that's the reason they're moving the game. You can simply just move people around in the stadium. But I believe it's actually after when, you know, this second leg will be played. I think it's April 12th. They're hosting a lovely motocross event, the Monster Energy Supercross event. It's coming to Gillette Stadium. Just a lovely amount of dirt will be poured on Gillette Stadium. So if I had to guess, that's probably the reason. So we can thank the lovely motorcycles for kind of ruining this second leg advantage that the Revolution have. And I know my colleague Sean Donahue, he kind of posted the stat where, you know, when you look at it in terms of, you know, MLS teams going up against Liga MX teams, game our series where they have two legs, you know, the difference between, you know, having that second leg advantage and not having a second leg advantage is very great. So it just really makes things tougher for New England Revolution, and it's obviously already very tough because Club America, you know, is definitely just, you know, one of the gems of Mexican soccer. So it's gonna be a really tough challenge for the Revolution to advance.
No, I agree with you there. It's going to be a very difficult challenge. And unfortunately, it sounds like the marketing department, or at least the scheduling department for games, are not paying attention to what competitions the New England Revolution are involved with when it comes to the CONCACAF Champions Cup. I mean, this is an important tournament. This is for not just winning a championship, saying you're the best club side in the entire region of CONCACAF, but the opportunity to go to the FIFA Club World Cup if you do go all the way. And now you have to hope, not only do you have a good result against Club America at Gillette Stadium in the first leg, but you got to go down to the Estadio Azteca. It's altitude. It's, you know, the match is at night, so the smog won't be a problem. But still, though, this is something that the Revolution has to learn. You cannot shoot yourselves in the foot when you have a major opportunity in front of you.
Yeah, like you said, that Club World Cup is a major opportunity, something, you know, that players can only dream of, going up against some of those top teams in Europe. And I guess it just allows you to bang the drum once again that the Revolution need to get their own stadium. So hopefully that will somehow happen. It always seems like Revolution fans are going to have to wait to see shovel go into dirt and, you know, actual stuff to be happening. But they could really use their own stadium, so they don't exactly have to worry about issues like these.
No, exactly, and that's the hope there. And in the Revere section of Boston, I mean, look, I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for every other Revolution supporter and New England soccer supporter to hopefully they'll have that groundbreaking ceremony and start shoveling into that dirt and build that stadium, because God knows. I mean, look, I'm happy that the Crafts own the club and they own the stadium, and you don't have to pay any rent. But I'm sorry, it's time to build a soccer stadium in the downtown Boston area, or at least within the Boston vicinity. So we'll see what happens there. Now let's preview the next matchup. What does the Revolution need to do against Club America? We all know about winning, but now that the schedule has reversed for where the first leg will be played, what do you think the Revolution need to do to take on one of the top clubs in all of Mexico?
Yeah, I definitely think it's easier said than done in terms of what they need to do. But in that matchup at Gillette, they really have to go all out. I think, you know, if they're able to somehow put in a similar performance that they did with Halo Wednesday, where they were able to score multiple goals and just really – you know, build up that aggregate lead, you're really going to need to do that. And obviously there's a ton of pitcher congestion at the moment. Obviously you're going to get a little bit of a break with the upcoming FIFA window. But the Revolution are simply going to have to play their best 11, no matter, I would say, you know, the fixture congestion or overall wear on the players. And they're going to have to go all out for that game, because obviously, when you head down to the Estadio Azteca, it's going to be a very difficult match. You know, it's going to be a great atmosphere, but also a very difficult atmosphere to walk away with a win, never mind a draw. So it really comes down to that first leg, that now that you don't have that second leg advantage, you're kind of unable to kind of feel the game out and kind of see, you know, where you can strike with Club America. You're going to have to go all out in that first game. And if, you know, you walk away with a 1-0 or probably even a 2-0 win, you're probably haven't done enough to move on to the next round. So that first leg is going to be extremely crucial.
And don't forget, with the away goals still in play, if the Revolution were going to start in the first leg in Mexico, they could have pulled an away goal and saved the tie and be ready to come home and possibly knock out Club America. So we'll see what happens there. And it's just unfortunate. But anyway, Sam, congratulations with the Revolution advancing to the quarterfinals. And hopefully for them, they can do the job over Club America. Talk to you next month. Thanks again, and you have a good night, my friend.
Appreciate it, Dan. Thank you so much.
All right. That's Sam Minton from the Blazing Musket covering the New England Revolution, as once again they are advanced into the quarterfinals. Now joining me tonight, covering the Philadelphia Union for Philadelphia Soccer Now, the one and only Matt Ralph joining me tonight. Matt, the floor is yours. What the hell happened?
Oh, wow. So, man, it feels like a lifetime has passed since we last talked last Friday. Yeah, it was not a good night. It was, you know, I think Union fans, there's a quote from Jim Curtin where he said, not good. And, you know, it's a little meme that people post. And I was like, that's really the best way to sum it up for the Union's exit from the Champions Cup. It wasn't good. That it was, you know, kind of embarrassing. It was their worst loss ever as a team, and one of the worst losses ever in a knockout stage of the tournament for MLS. So it was pretty much a disaster in every sense of the word.
I mean, look, the first goal, I know VAR had to come in for review. I don't know if it was clear enough. Did Kai Wagner step on the attacker? Did he really step on him? To me, I don't know if he clipped him, he nicked him, but I know I saw his boot go down on a leg or an ankle or something on that.
Yeah, and the arm across the back. I mean, the issue I had with that call wasn't that the call was made. It's more one of those, you know, if it's called in the run of play, it's not going to get overturned, you know. But VAR, it has to be – I feel like we talk about this a lot, right? It has to be clear and obvious, and I don't know that it was clear and obvious. So that's a tough break. And I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, they lost 6-0. So that doesn't really make – I mean, there's probably somewhere somebody's arguing that that changes the entire game, and if that doesn't get called, they don't somehow magically let up 6 goals. But it does. It's like the first. It's so early in the game, and before I say, Jim Curtin says it all the time. I mean, they're not a team that is built to come from behind. They're, you know, the best way to beat the Union, I think I said it last week, the best way thing Pachuca can do is actually finish a chance early in the game. And with the altitude in their favor, with the fans in their favor, you know, getting that early goal just really – it really did change the game. I mean, I think the Union were just really not prepared to play in that environment. You know, some people will say, oh, you know, you can't really overstate the altitude. They played terribly. It's like, you know, my wife, who doesn't follow soccer at all, she was like – she, like, stopped in through the kitchen and was like, oh, how are the Union doing? I said, not good. She's like, well, I would expect them not to do well. Like, if it's, you know, that's at elevation, like, that's tough. How long have they been there? She's like, oh, they should have been there a week. Like, it's funny, my wife never weighs in on anything with soccer. And she's like, wait, they only got there on Sunday? Well, there's no weather. How are they supposed to be ready to play in that altitude? So, I mean, it was definitely a factor. And I think, but, you know, at the same time, you know, they were making mistakes early in the game too. So it wasn't like they got to the 80th minute and they completely lost their, you know, they had nothing left. I mean, the wheels really came off early in the second half. That late goal in the first half really, really, really. And it's funny. I was saying this, the Union so often are the team that does that, right? Like, they are that team where you're like, okay, we're going to go into the break 0-0. It's not bad, or we're up 1-0, and they'll score that kind of goal. And Pachuca scoring that goal on them, really, I think that goal wins the game, because, you know, they get the first one, it gets, you know, waved off, and then you're like thinking, okay, all right, we can breathe. Jim can get the boys to the locker room, have a talk. It's 1-0, but no, all of a sudden it's 2-0, and that really felt like this game is pretty much over now after that second goal.
I had that funny feeling myself. Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Matt. It's just really a shame. I mean, Rondon gets that hat trick, and then of course 3 more goals come in, and you know. But you could put the touchdown on the Union, but they don't get the extra point. I mean, I guess that's a saving grace, but still, though, I mean, what was that feeling like, and what was the sense you were getting from union supporters, like through social media, that were following, you know, your page and, you know, your account? Like, Matt, what the heck's going on here, Matt? Help us, help us! What's going on?
Well, it's funny. I say this, yeah. You know, we get a lot more engagement when things go wrong than when things go right. But, you know, I think the narrative around this team has been, you know, through the off season into to now, pretty much since, you know, the penalty shootout in LA, where they lose the MLS Cup final on penalties. The conversation has really been around this team and the ambition of the ownership and the willingness to spend money, you know, in a game when LAFC is bringing Bale off the bench to score a late equalizer to send it to extra time, you know, or I'm sorry, to send it to penalties. You know, that's been the conversation, you know, how, and, you know, this team is very good at, you know, kind of marketing itself as this, you know, hard scrabble Philly team, even though, you know, it's, you know, Philly's down the road. You know, you know, we build from within through our academy and all this, and like, you know, there, you know, we don't spend a lot of money, and I think it's wearing thin on the fans because, you know, fans, you know, obviously Philadelphia, you know, known for its fan base and its support, but, you know, this is, you know, a case of we're gonna run it back and run it back, and you know, fans are like not buying it because there's no trophies. You know, they have the COVID cup, so to speak, the supporter shield from a 23 game season during the COVID, and nothing else to show for it. So I think immediately, you know, the reaction is like, this is terrible. It's Jay Sugarman's fault. I mean, that's really as quickly as goals went in and Rondon, you know, which let's just say Rondon had an amazing game. I mean, what a performance.
Yeah.
You know, if not for that Blake save, which was a great save, like the guy could have, and the offside or the goal that was waved off, I mean, the guy could have had five or six on the night. I mean, just outstanding performance. I mean, really, you know, I thought Quiñones for Atlas was unbelievable last year, and when the Union beat them. I mean, but I mean, in terms of a performance against the Union by a player in this competition, I mean, it's we're going to, you know, unfortunately, Philadelphia fans are going to remember for a long time, but just an outstanding night for him, and just really made, you know, generally a good defensive team look silly. And I think that's, you know, there's this feeling of maybe a little tired, a little retread, right? It's like we keep bringing back the same team, and we're not seeing progress in terms of actually winning trophies. And, you know, then some people, you know, the curtain out movement, you know, gets quiet and gets loud at moments like this. But, you know, it's still, I think, the most pragmatic of fans look to the, yes, that's great. You've brought some players through your academy, and you've had, you know, various levels of success. But, you know, when you're competing more and more with teams that are, you know, big spenders and spending wisely. I mean, it's not all just Toronto blowing a bunch of money on, you know, to be last place. I mean, Inter Miami seems to be spending their money wisely. I mean, spending a lot of it, certainly, but Atlanta seems to be back on the rise again. So, you know, I think there's an apathy that sets in, and there's a concern that, you know, this team has been so good for so long, but they still haven't been able to be that. Finish the job. And the feeling now, I think, is, and now they're not an Open Cup, which is just disappointing all the way around. And it's like there's a long season ahead, but there's just, you know, a lot of angst, understandably, after that type of exit. I mean, if they, mm-hmm. you know, they lose to Pachuca, no one's gonna cancel their season tickets, but to lose the way they did was just really, really demoralizing for sure.
Absolutely. You know, not playing your regularly scheduled league match against the Sounders because of the waterlogged pitch and because of the horrible rain of storm that was in the Philadelphia area. I mean, I thought it was an advantage for the Union to maybe get on the plane quickly and then fly down to Mexico to get acclimated and stuff. But yeah, no, this is how the schedule is, and this is still difficult for some MLS clubs to get down to Mexico and find a way to break through and get that necessary result.
Yeah, and this is in terms of venues in Mexico. Go, I think a lot of people know. Mexico City, for its altitude, but this is, there's only one other Liga MX venue with a higher altitude, right? So, I mean, the acclimation is right. It's not enough time to acclimate to that, but it's not realistic that they would be there for a week anyway. So, I think it's a really tough place to play from that perspective. The Union, let's be real. The Union have not been playing their best soccer. It is still early in the season for them. They get a little bit of a pass going against a Pachuca team that's much improved. It seems to be much improved over last year, is one of the top teams in the standings right now. They're tied with, two other teams for first place in the table. So, I think it was always going to be a stretch, but even in the same token, they get a goal at home, which they probably should have. And honestly, if Carranza's in the lineup in that game, the first leg, they probably win 1-0, right?
Yep.
And that changes the scenario. And so I think it ends in a similar unfortunate exit, but like the Club America tie, they started out in Mexico playing in those venues. It's tough to acclimate quickly to a new environment, but it's also experience. And I think, Jim has kind of reiterated that, just the experience that the players, particularly the younger players, but just the players in general are getting, and the experience that the club and the organization is gaining from being in this. I mean, they're not alone. I mean, Jim was – pointed out today that the record for MLS teams in Mexico is not great in this competition. And so that's no excuse. And I don't think he was saying that as an excuse for the way he played, because they played terribly. He says in the next sentence, is like, it's tough to win down there, but there's no excuse for what we played terribly. Like, I don't think they would win in those MLS venues playing like that. I mean, there's USL teams. I mean, I think if they went to Pittsburgh and played like that, the Riverhounds would beat them. I think it's one of those things where it's tough, and I think it does. I'm certainly one to cast aspersions on the League's Cup format, but that's where not playing these teams in Mexico makes a difference. And, I think Mexico very much has the advantage. And I think their top teams are playing better this year in this competition as well. So I think they're flexing their muscles a little bit, and why not? They should, because it's a great league and with great teams. And they've definitely shown that in this competition so far this year.
Absolutely, and hopefully for the Union, they'll get back to a spot to get back to the CONCACAF Champions Cup for the next edition next year, and hopefully they'll have a better turnout than they did this one. But anyway, Matt, thanks again for joining me tonight. Hope to have you on again back on the show later on the season. I'll talk to you soon, my friend, and you and your family have a good night, and thanks again for joining us.
Hey, always a pleasure. Appreciate it, Daniel.
All right, thanks a lot. Matt Ralph, Philadelphia Soccer Now, joining us here on the 4ACs Fire American Soccer Show. As the Union fall to Pachuca 6-0 on aggregate, 6-0 in the second leg after the scoreless first leg at Subaru Park. My next guest right now is a happy camper, because why? Inter Miami advancing to the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. They take out Nashville SC 3-1 in the second leg. It is Peter Brown from Football Miami TV joining me tonight once again. Peter, welcome back. It was early, and then it was a quick destruction, but Inter Miami advances.
The most dangerous team in a short tournament, I think. We have proven, I guess, in a short period of time that we are really good in these small tournaments. I don't know how we'll do in a full league season, but in these shorter tournaments, the team steps up. And in this case, yeah, it took care of business quick. You know, I think it's always fun, these games against Nashville. I think down here we're starting to consider Nashville to be the true rivalry, not Orlando, as much as the league wants that to be. Because, you know, we've had so many meaningful games against Nashville. I think this is now the third time we've knocked them out of a competition. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun and exciting. You know, so good that they were able to take Messi out early.
Absolutely. And listen, I don't blame Tata Martino at all for, you know, prioritizing this tournament for the club, because this is, you know, you're going to lead to another trophy here, and we'll see what happens down the road. But still, though, the action that I saw in the opening 23, 24 minutes was absolutely thrilling. Messi setting up Suarez for that opening goal in the 8th minute. And then, of course, Messi taking his goal. I mean, anytime Messi takes a shot on goal, it's spectacular, no matter how easy or how hard it looks. He's just amazing what he does.
Yeah, and how good are some of these surrounding players starting to look? Gomez, who many of us down here were questioning why Tata keeps putting this young kid in. I know he's one of our U22 initiatives, so there's an investment there, but we kept scratching our head going, okay, fine, you know, he's done well with his national team, but he's just not doing it here. Well, you know, he really started to look good in this Champions Cup, and, you know, his charging into the box and then, you know, laying it off for Messi to score that goal was great. I mean, he had a really good game, and that first goal was also, Alba was in on that, Alba-Messi-Suarez connection, so we got our old legs teaming up and scoring goals. Plus, I think Redondo, who's new to the team, is starting to gel, and I think he had a really good game as well.
No, he really did. I thought everybody had a very good game. I thought Callender had a solid game. Maybe a couple of times positioning was off, but I thought he was decent in goal.
Yeah, he's not looking the same as he did last year. You know, last year, especially in, like, if you look at the League's Cup, I mean, he is one of the main reasons, you know, other than Messi, that we won that title. He stood on his head to, you know, to take us to that trophy. But he's looking a little shaky this year. You know, suspect on his you know, when the ball's at his feet, and just seems to be a little bit unsure sometimes. I mean, he got lucky, you know, the coming out and then and missing the, you know, balls and things like that. So he's made some good saves. He's still, you know, but I don't know what it is. Well, why is he confidence shaken or something? I don't know. But you got to call it to the national team, so that maybe that'll help his confidence. And we need to get him back, you know, where he was for this next leg of this tournament.
No, I agree with you completely. You really need a strong goalkeeper out there to make sure that nothing gets beaten badly the way, of course, that loss to Montreal was in league play. I mean, that was that was terrible.
Yeah, especially with our defense, it's just not great. Now, we're adding more pieces. You know, reports are we've basically signed Marcelo Weingart. I can't say his last name, but, you know, from on a loan from Boca Juniors. So, you know, putting in a right back so Gressel can go back up into the midfield. But Tata keeps wanting to play with this three-man/five-man back, whatever you want to call it. And we just don't see it really working, but he keeps pushing it. He says the reason for it is because he doesn't have a natural right back. Well, hopefully that is getting solved, because I think this team plays better with four in the back. With only three, a lot is dependent on that goalkeeper, because Christoph is old and slow. His positioning can be good, but he's just not fast. Avilés, not exactly fast either, but young and makes some, you know, boneheaded mistakes sometimes. Freire, I can't say his name either. You know, seems to be doing better. I'm terrible at these names, Daniel.
Come on, Peter. You need an encyclopedia for something like this. So get a linguistic person to help you out.
I mean, it's that's part of my shtick. That's part of my shtick. I screw it up all the time. Everybody teaches me on the show.
So does Uncle Ed also help you with these names or no?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, boy, Peter, what are we going to do with you? Come on.
I don't know. You're not gonna teach me a new language at this age. That's not happening. I haven't learned Portuguese, you know, even though my wife wants me to. So certainly not going to get any better pronouncing some of these names. I'm just happy I could say Avilés. Without saying that
there
wrong
you
for
go.
A while, too.
All right. Okay. I'll forgive
Messi's
you. Don't worry.
To say.
That's right. Whatever your wife does to you, that's her problem, not mine. But I'll forgive you. Don't worry. Anyway, Robert Taylor comes in, made it 3-0 in the 63rd minute. And I think that was the nail in the coffin that really had to happen. I know you had 2-0 on aggregate. Not on aggregate, on the away goals. But still, though, 5-2 on aggregate at that time looked really, really comfortable. And then, of course, looked like Nashville pulled one back. And, you know, we don't know. There's something maybe brewing. But then VAR pulls that away.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, VAR. We appreciate that. People that complain about VAR, I'm a fan. It worked. But, yeah, they, you know, look, Nashville's a good team. And they make the games exciting. That's why I said they are, I think, our best rivalry, regardless of what MLS says and stuff like that. I mean, it's just the games get heated. They have really – Hani Mukhtar is probably one of the best players in the league. I mean, I know he's won awards for it. And Surridge gets that goal at the end, a little too late, but they're a solid team, and they're going to do well in this MLS season. Now, I think I don't know if everybody would agree with us, but I mean, I think the fact that we played another MLS team, we had the easier path. Now I know we have to play a tough Monterrey, but we didn't have to go to Mexico. Like you were just previously talking about, like Philadelphia, I did watch that game, and that was terrible. And MLS teams don't do well in Mexico, so we were fortunate that we're playing a team that is in the same, you know, status as we are as far as the beginning of their season, still starting to gel, stuff like that, where as opposed to playing somebody in the middle of their season. So I think we got the lucky break there, and now we'll just see what happens in the next leg.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are you expecting from Monterrey? I mean, I know you watched them play against Cincinnati, but what worries you about this Monterrey side? Because many people are already saying that this is going to be probably the biggest test for Inter Miami in this tournament. But at the same time, you know, with Messi and friends, do you think it does somewhat even the playing field, or do you think they're going to start feeling the altitude that probably is going on over there in Monterrey as well?
Well, yeah, and that altitude definitely concerns me. That's why this first game that's going to be in Fort Lauderdale is going to be super important. I just got my ticket today for that game. What is it? I think April 3rd. So that they have to definitely have to win that game. Can't let Monterrey score any goals, really, because that can come back to hurt us. Because you know, we need to be able to go to Monterrey with the idea of, yeah, maybe we just don't lose terribly, or we just, come out with a tie and then it's a victory. Because it is a challenge playing over there, and that altitude is nuts. I mean, I forgot what they said on the broadcast, but I mean, it's a higher altitude there than it is in Mexico City, right? I mean, I think that's what they were saying.
Mm-hmm.
That's just crazy. And you know, our players are coming from all over. Well, they're mostly coming from Argentina. So we are like the Argentina juniors now. Seems like that's the only place we scout. But, I'm sure some of those players, you know, had to play in some altitude. Maybe some of them have played some games in Bolivia and things like that with, their youth nationals or what have you. So hopefully there's some experience there. They're not all Florida boys. So that's a positive.
No, it really, really is. I will say this, though, is this, is that I agree with you that winning, or not so much winning, but scoring a lot of goals at home would be the best. And don't forget, though, Brandon Vasquez is on Monterrey as well. So, I mean, at least he has some familiarity with MLS teams, including what, you know, defeating his old team in Cincinnati, obviously. But, you know,
And how good has he looked, too?
Oh, I know. No, he's been fantastic. He's been absolutely fantastic for Monterrey. And without a doubt in my mind, I mean, he should be on the national team. But that's a different story anyway. But, you know, what else did you have to worry about here with this matchup? Besides, you know, maybe Tata Martino trying to match wits with their manager at Monterrey.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've very briefly watched Monterrey, so I mean, I haven't caught all their games, but I do know, you know, I am familiar with Vasquez, and I know how quickly he seems to have gelled over there. They have a couple other, you know, good players. I'm not going to pretend like I'm super familiar with them, but I'm mostly concerned just, you know, about our old legs, you know, playing over there, and Messi apparently has a bit of a hamstring injury. Now, I'm sure that'll be fine by then, if not worse. You know, I don't know. It could go either way by then. You know, he'll have played in a game or two before that. And so you never know where that's going to go. And that's a risk with our old guys, is that, you know, they're going to get injured easily. And just strains, lots of little minor strains that can keep you out of a game or two. And we all know that Messi's main importance is the national team, not so much anything with Inter Miami.
That's true. That's very true. Until the day he finally says, I'm done playing for the national team, he'll always defer to Argentina without a doubt. That's for damn sure. And nothing wrong with that at all. Look, obviously, he finally won his World Cup back in 2022, and I guess he's looking for maybe one more opportunity to win the World Cup and maybe another opportunity to win the Copa America. So it's going to be interesting to see what Messi's going to do. Yeah. And he'll still be in – No, come on.
I know this. Yeah, but wasn't he kind of saying he was done at one point? You know, he's not, though. But I was hoping he would be done. I mean, once he signs with my team, you know, I want him to be done with that. But, he was actually just did a photo session with the new Argentina shirt or whatever at Drive Pink. Chase Stadium.
Chase Stadium.
Yeah. Got to get used to that.
That's 10 bucks.
We're chasing the trophy. Yeah. Yeah.
That's 10 bucks. You know that. You made a mistake.
No, all right. I make a lot of those.
It's all right. That's all right. I won't hold you to it. I promise. I promise you I wouldn't do that to you. So, but
we're more of the entertainment side of the story. We'll leave the facts to other people.
Exactly. Sadly, I like to do both ways. I like to give facts and entertain at the same time. That's just me, though. But anyway.
You're good at it.
Okie dokie. Anyway, you know, what's everyone talking? How is everyone talking about this run now in the Champions Cup? Like, you know, you listen to the Miami supporters. Your listeners, your YouTube watchers with you and Uncle Ed on the show. You know, they send you messages. You know, what do you hear from them about this run right now?
The main thing people talk about down here are the prices. I'll be honest with you, and how. They feel like the club isn't, you know, giving season ticket holders like first right of refusal for their seats. I mean, there's a lot of that going on. People are just, you know, if you looked at that game at this last Nashville game, you saw a lot of empty seats, even though it was, you know, 18,000 sold apparently, but there was a lot of empty seats. That's what people talk about even more than the game right now, which is sad but true. And then the other thing too is a lot of people down here. You know, because, you know, they may be just getting into this team because of one player. And so they, you know, they don't know necessarily the importance of Champions Cup. I saw people asking questions, what's the most important cup? What's the most important tournament for this team? And a lot of people answered MLS Cup. And I had to get in there and go, no, you're all wrong. It's not. Because this tournament has got, you know, it's got a better prize. It, you know, you get to go to the, you know, Club World Cup. I mean, it's got more clout, if you will. So, yeah. that, you know, it's you know, people, you know, obviously they're, you know, those that are going to the games are excited, but it just, there's a lot of just unhappy fans down here because of the ticket prices. They're just through the roof.
Yeah, no, I understand that. That's really tough to see. But anyway, Peter, thank you very much for joining me tonight. Definitely have you back on for the quarterfinal review shows. Thank you again. I'll talk to you soon, and you have a good night.
All right, thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you. Peter Brown from Football Miami TV, as it is Inter Miami taking out Nashville SC 3-1, the second leg, 5-3 on aggregate, and they move on to the quarterfinals. My next guest, unfortunately, cannot join me tonight. He was originally scheduled to join me. It was Kenta Hagiwara from Area Sportsnet on FC Cincinnati. At the moment, FC Cincinnati media members are not doing any reporting on the club due to the continued battle, the war of words, between the club and Miss Laurel Fowler, who got her credentials suspended for 2 weeks. You have been following that report in social media as well. I've seen it. It's disgusting what they're doing. I call it basically Angelos-itis, and if you know what that means, the Angelos family suspending their Masson Orioles broadcaster because all he did was point out a negative, because all of a sudden it turns into a positive, and the Orioles and the owners of the Orioles suspended Mr. Kevin Brown, who was their play-by-play man. And unfortunately, this is another version of that, and it's just absolutely a travesty. And we'll talk more about that on my regular 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer show when we get to it on Monday. But I will talk about the game. But before I talk about the game, I have to talk about Fox Sports. You know, Fox Sports is, you know, they have contracts to show all these soccer tournaments, not just the big international tournaments like the FIFA World Cup, of course, which is both the men's and the women's World Cup. That is always a big, big moment to be under. Now they're going to be doing the European Cup this summer, along with the Copa America this summer, which is what they've done the last time around. Of course, they have their contracts with CONCACAF when it involves the Gold Cup, when it involves the under-17 CONCACAF tournament, the under-20 CONCACAF tournament. And then, of course, showing the under-17 World Cup and the under-20 World Cup from FIFA on the English language broadcasts. We all understand this. But when you are showing the CONCACAF Champions Cup or the CONCACAF Champions League, however you want to do it, however you want to go about it, it is your job, Fox Sports, to go out and show all of the matches of those rounds that you were scheduled to do. And in the middle of the second half, when Brandon Vasquez made it 2-1 in the second leg against Cincinnati, 3-1 on aggregate, at, I would say, around the 74th, 75th minute, what happens? Automatically, you switched over to the Pac-12 men's basketball tournament game. And all of a sudden, it's gone. Now, apparently, I did not see it, but apparently, you said the match will finish on your Fox Sports app. Well, I went to your website, and I also went to your app. And on the window that has a picture of the shields or the logos of Monterrey and FC Cincinnati, what is there but the same Pac-12 men's basketball game that is on your regular channel? So in other words, you decided to cut away from an important soccer match, because what would have happened if Cincinnati would have came back? What would have happened? Well, that was lost. That was gone. People are upset. Now, okay, well, there's always TUDN. Yeah, I understand that, but there are some people that don't want to go for the Spanish language channel. They want to go for the English language channel. And I'm not saying this to be anti-TUDN or anti-Univision, because look, if I have to go there, I'll go there. I don't care. Myself personally, I do not care. But what I do care about is I want to see these sports networks have the same care for soccer everywhere else around the world, the same care for it in this part of the world. Once again, Fox Sports did this 2 years ago, or it was even last year, when the Baseball World, the World Baseball Classic was on, and they cut out of a game of the Champions League and went straight to the World Baseball Classic game. Even though they jumped back in, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. This time they didn't jump back in. They just said, "That's it. You're done. You're done." Do you know how many times people get upset at ESPN because the program before the soccer match was supposed to go on, ESPN has a rule saying we will not cut away from a current game until it is completely over. So then we will go to it whenever it's being played. And they do go to a different channel, which is, if it's on ESPN, it'll go to ESPN2. If it's on ESPN2, then it'll go on ESPN News or ESPNU. Or you can just now stream it. But the streaming is screwed up anyway. Because why? Because Fox Sports cut it out all the way. Gone. Finished. Finito. I understand we're in the March Madness tournament. Not the actual tournament, but the conference basketball tournaments for both the men and the women. I understand that, and they're important too. I understand that you get a lot of money broadcasting, whether it be the Big East or the Pac-12, or it's the Big Ten, or it's the SEC, or if it's the A-10 or whatever, or the Big 12 or whatever it is. I understand it. But your obligation, Fox Sports, was the CONCACAF Champions Cup between Monterrey and FC Cincinnati. And if you did not pull that off, we wouldn't be talking like this. Do you know how many soccer fans in this area you made angry? You know how many soccer fans in the United States, and probably even from Mexico, or people who are fans of Monterrey that live in the United States, they lost it. Well, they're probably watching TUDN. But what if the English language people wanted it in English? They're watching it there. It is an absolute tragedy and disgrace to absolutely cut away from that match. I could not believe what I saw. I could not believe the stupidity of Fox Sports. And they did that for the second time. For the second time, they cut away from a CONCACAF Champions League, a club tournament of CONCACAF. Once again, CONCACAF, I'll say it again, go to CBS Sports. Take away everything from Fox Sports and go to CBS Sports. At least they show respect. If it's going to be on their CBS Sports Network channel, you know it's not going to get taken off. Paramount Plus, it won't get taken off. CBS Sports Golazo Network, it won't get taken off. You are a failure, Fox Sports. An absolute failure. And you just keep proving it over and over and over again. I am disgusted. I am angry. And I cannot believe that you had to cut away in the middle of the second half from a 2-1 match, 3-1 on aggregate, that Monterrey was winning, where you should have allowed them to continue. But you didn't. And you cut it all off. Thanks a lot. Thank you very much. You're a disgrace. And this is why I feel bad for Rob Stone. This is why I feel bad for Alexi Lalas. This is why I feel bad for John Strong. This is why I feel bad for Stu Holden. This is why I feel bad for all those great broadcasters and analysts that are on Fox Sports. Because why? Because the head honchos don't know what the hell they're doing. It's a disgrace. Absolute disgrace. But anyway, Monterrey defeating FC Cincinnati 2-1 in the second leg here. Luis Bueno got a great goal to make it 1-0 in the second leg in the 41st minute. Even though Cincinnati had a great start to the match, Monterrey held them pretty good. And then Luciano Acosta pulls an away goal back, leveled the away goals. So it was 1-1 on the second leg, 2-1 on aggregate. But then again, it's that former Cincinnati man, Brandon Vasquez, who does it for Monterrey, doesn't celebrate heavily in front of his old team. And once again, FC Cincinnati eliminated from the CONCACAF Champions Cup as Monterrey does the business, and they move on to the next round in the quarterfinals of the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So there's nothing more you can say or do. And you just have to hope that for Cincinnati, it's a learning experience. They did well in their first round matches. Playing against the Liga MX side, it's a whole different ball of wax. You got to be on your toes. And you got to find a way to punch through that defense. You got to. Because if you're not going to be able to punch through, you're going to fall. And unfortunately, that's what it is. As they say, sometimes you eat the bear, and sometimes the bear eats you, but always dress for the hunt. I know, Pleasure Island, old Disney World area. But what are you going to do? The Adventurers Club. It was a fun time back in those days. I'll never forget it. But anyway. And unfortunately now for MLS clubs, except for the two teams that were eliminated by their fellow MLS clubs, we have clubs now eliminated by Liga MX sides. So basically, let's see, that's two. Orlando, that's the Union, that's Cincinnati. That's, let's see, Nashville, Houston, Philadelphia. Let's just make sure I get it correctly here. Philadelphia, yep, that's one. That's the Dynamo, that's two. That's Orlando City, that's three. That's Cincinnati, that's four. And that's Inter Miami, and that's five. Oh, and also Vancouver, so that's six. Even though they're Canadian, that's six. And three clubs remain in New England, Columbus, and Miami. So let's see here. We know the Dynamo are going to be defending their Open Cup championship, but hey, nobody else is going to the Open Cup, only their two teams, or basically nobody at all. So we have an excuse now, MLS, don't we? Or if you'd like to make an excuse, you go ahead and tell us. Where's the fixture congestion now? Is there fixture congestion? Maybe for the next three clubs that are remaining in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, but hey, who's counting? It's amazing, isn't it? These clubs could have played already in the Open Cup. Oh, and let's not forget St. Louis as well. That's seven. St. Louis as well is gone. So five MLS teams in the round of 16. Two more in the first round? Hey, what do I know? Still, though, at least one of those teams is going to be defending their Open Cup title, and that is the Houston Dynamo. And unfortunately, they fell to the Columbus Crew in their second leg, but as I've always said, there has to be a winner, and unfortunately, there has to be a loser. And now joining me tonight from Bayou City Soccer, my good friend is Mr. Derek Stowers, covering the Houston Dynamo for Bayou City Soccer. And Derek, look, I know the Dynamo tried their best. They they tried to pull one back, and they did. It's just unfortunate that the stoppage time was not given a little more leeway in the back end.
Yeah, it was a little unfortunate that it took them up until the 90th minute to really show a little bit of show some teeth, and then try and get in it. It kind of felt maybe towards the end, before the penalty, that they had not necessarily given up, because you never really give up. Head is already kind of down, but, you know, sometimes it just takes that one little spark. But if that spark happens a little too late, you know, stoppage time or not, you know, it's an uphill battle. But, you know, probably, you know, given how we played in that game, you know, it's hard to be upset when, like we were talking about last time, just with a very congested schedule compared to the Crew, because we had already been playing in this tournament, a number of injuries to big players. And you know, we played the champions pretty well, you know, I think pretty fair to go into their building and leave with a tie, but probably also fair to end up losing one goal through both legs. So just got to look at some of the positives, because sometimes you just get beat.
No, it's true. I mean, look, I thought the Dynamo actually started off very well. I thought they were on the front foot. I mean, they really tried to break through, try to, you know, take on Schulte there. And, I mean, he did make some decent saves. I mean, obviously there's some moments where you'd like to have back, but I mean, I thought the Dynamo were on the front foot, and I really thought that they were trying to get that tying goal on aggregate, or at least level the away goals, because once you did that, you know, it's all for, you know, everything's up for grabs.
Yeah, you know, I thought the exact same thing, that they came out with a lot of fire, like you would expect, being down a goal. Especially in a away goal. But, you know, the Crew they're a quality team, and their ability to kind of absorb some of that pressure and then turn it around was pretty bad for us. And then our, you know, Ben Olsen talked about it in the press conference, that the final pass in the final third, I mean, it was just lacking. And, you know, that's something that I said last week when we didn't score. And, yeah, I mean, it's too slow. It allows Columbus to reset and communicate and shift and to keep their shape defensively, while we're just bumping it around the top of the 18, and then we give it away, and then they can either control it or go on a counterattack, which is how they ended up scoring, because apparently we keep sleeping on Cucho Hernandez, and you can't do that.
No, you can't. And he converts that goal in the 40th minute to make it 1-0 in the match and 2-0 on aggregate, and the advantage is all over Columbus right there. And I mean, look, he's a great player, and it really stinks when you have so many injuries on the club, and you're just not going at the pace you really want to go. And did you feel that Ben Olsen bunkered in a little bit more than normal in this one?
I think, at times he plays it pretty safe. And, you know, he was, for the most part, just keeping Ibrahim Aliu up on an island. And I said this last week, I think that he is looking really good, and if he can have a quality number nine to bounce off with, and maybe, you know, whenever Hector Herrera comes back, he's just going to keep getting better. Well, or, you know, looking better, producing more, because he needs some of that help. And some of the guys, you know, they're trying really well, but when you've got some of your guys sitting a little deeper, it forwards don't like that necessarily. You know, they like help. They like attention off of them. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it was good. You know, speaking of injuries, we had Sviatchenko, who left Oh God, so many games and so many in so little time.
Get the MASH unit.
That one. Yeah, but he was on the bench at least. He didn't play, but that was good to see. Bartlow, who had a really good game in the first leg, kind of struggled a little in this one. He was the guy who got completely juked out of his pants by Cucho. Kopar had one of those I forget who he denied, but it easily could have been an own goal, but it somehow, you know, went out for a corner for Columbus. But yeah, I think Ben Olsen, I think his initial strategy was to really go at him quick and early. Columbus adjusted really well to that and then seized control and kind of forced the Dynamo to sit deeper behind the ball. And another reason for that was some of our passes out of the back were lazy, and we were giving up the ball, so we had to keep some guys back just in case that kept happening, and that's not conducive necessarily to converting on the other end of the field.
Yep. No, I understand completely. And once again, Dorsey gets the – now, here's my question for you, though. You know, isn't it weird to see – you know, I know that the VAR wants to make sure the calls are correct and everything, but, I mean, it took them how long to get that penalty call correctly to say it's a penalty,
yeah,
or at least to confirm it's a penalty, and it went into the stoppage time. So couldn't the referee give another minute or two? I just don't understand that.
I mean – a lot of that is up to the center's, you know, discretion after the stoppage time has been called. But at the same time, like, it's kind of I don't have the referee handbook in front of me, but, you know, from my understanding is it's kind of an unwritten rule to let a little bit go. And I don't think 30 seconds nearly makes up for some of the amount of stops that, you know, not counting the penalty, happened within those 3 minutes of stoppage time. So it easily should have been like another 2-3 minutes. And, you know, it is what it is because, you know, maybe that's exactly what we need just to get through. But there's always that pressure of when does the ref blow the whistle. So, I mean, yeah, we should have converted earlier in the game, but yeah, I don't know how you take a look at something for 3-4 minutes when it's pretty clear it was a handball. Everybody knew it.
No, I agreed. Everyone knows it. I just don't know how you want to make sure and drag it out. And just like I said, if the review is going into stoppage time, then you got to add on another minute, because I know it's 4 minutes, it's fine. But I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, at least another minute should have been added on. That's all I'm saying. I mean, look, the whistle,
agree.
I understand the game was over. But, I mean, come on, add another minute or two at least.
Yeah, the ball stopped. Like, the referee is literally holding play to make sure players don't enter the box at the wrong, you know, at the wrong time, that the keeper stays on his line, you know, all this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Great penalty though by Dorsey. I thought he converted it well. And
yeah, you know, for a guy that he really started coming into his own last season and was given a new contract this season, which is good by the front office to show their support for Dorsey. I mean, it's good. It was a good penalty for a defender, but he, you know, he used to play as a right winger earlier in his career. But yeah, I mean, I think some of those signs, you know, Bossy is one of our penalty takers. So you probably could see Coco taking it, but those guys were subbed off, you know, 5 minutes before, and those would have been your main penalty guys. Maybe Artur could have stepped up, but Dorsey got the ball, and that was a little surprising, but, you know, well earned, because, you know, people are going to start looking at him now for some of those, because that was right in the side netting, and that keeper's huge too.
I know, because Schulte was like tapping the top, the bottom of the crossbar, shaking it a little bit, and referee had to tell him, listen, you're shaking the Met. You can't do that. Okay, nope, I didn't know that. Sorry. But, yeah, that was weird. But, you know, at least he didn't move – at least the net didn't move away from where it was naturally positioned. That's a good thing. Yeah, crazy stuff. But, like I said, I thought – I just thought there should have been another minute or two, or at least another minute and a half added on because of the whole VAR situation. But other than that – I mean, it's really hard. I mean, look, it was great to see them advancing out of the first round, beating St. Louis, but obviously a little disheartening seeing them lose to Columbus in this round of 16. What do you think the Dynamo need to do if the next time they do get back into that tournament? But at the same time, be grateful that the Dynamo can defend their Open Cup championship this year, you know, because that would have been a travesty if they wouldn't have been allowed to defend their Open Cup title.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, you kind of have to look at, you know, the silver linings on not being able to go through. I mean, Ben Olsen in the press conference said that he was happy that we're on the right path. And I agree. You know, we're competing against, you know, not just a good team, but a great team in this league. We had, you know, our setbacks. And I think, Ben said it right. We're on the right path. If we – to go forward, it would definitely help to have a less condensed schedule. It would definitely help to not be as banged up. But I think, you know, as this team continues to grow, both together but also as new players come in, and as Ben, you know, gets his guys to do what he wants, I think that's going to go a long way. And, you know, it was interesting too. We were talking last time, you know, about, you know, is it better or worse to play a, you know, an MLS team, and, you know, it's got its ups and its downs. So it's just, yeah, I think Ben Olsen coming into this competition has more experience, and that's going to help. And same with these other guys too. So I think, hope those things, if they can all come together, I think it will yield a very positive result. But just some of those things coming together, I think, is going to make us look more competitive. But again, we were competitive in this one. Going down just one goal to the reigning champs is no small feat for a team with as many setbacks as we've had.
Nope, that's for sure. That's definitely for sure, and hopefully those setbacks will be taken care of down the road. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But anyway, Derek, you know, look, tough loss, unfortunately. Wish it didn't happen, but like I always say, you know, look, hopefully they'll qualify for the Champions Cup for next year, and hopefully it'll be a longer run than those two rounds were.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to, you know, and it's pretty great. Now we can focus on, you know, we can focus on the regular season, of course. We've got the U.S. Open Cup to look forward to. So we can hone our focus, and maybe that will help some of our, you know, our own growth for potentially coming into this tournament for next season. And, you know, that's what you can take away, because – you know, I think that you were saying it in your nice rant about Fox, something about the bear, but you come dressed to hunt anyway.
Oh, okay,
and,
yeah. Sometimes you eat the bear, and sometimes the bear eats you, but always dressed for the hunt.
I think that's very apt in this situation as well.
Thank you. Thank you. If you want to keep it, it's yours. I don't care. all I know is it's not trademarked, that's for sure.
Well, I'll probably try and incorporate it in more.
All right. Good. All right, good. But anyway, Derek, thanks for joining me tonight. Hope to have you back on the show again and down the road, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
All right, you too. Derek Stowers, Bayou City Soccer, covering the Houston Dynamo. Once again, they fall to the Columbus Crew in the match. It was a 1-1 draw in the second leg, but a 2-1 loss on aggregate to the Columbus Crew. As I've already said, there's our winners and there are losers, unfortunately. We already talked with Derek, unfortunately, for the Dynamo falling. Now it's time for a recorded interview with Mr. Adam Miller. Of course, he covers the Columbus Crew for the Massive Report, and here is that recording right now.
And this is the CONCACAF Champions Cup second leg of the Round of 16 review show, and joining me right now, he covers the Columbus Crew for the Massive Report. Adam Miller joins me again to talk about the Columbus Crew's 1-1 draw, but a 2-1 win on aggregate over the Houston Dynamo. Adam, welcome back, and the Columbus Crew, the defending MLS Cup champions, have done it again. They have advanced into the next round of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and that was a big, big tie series win for the Crew.
Yeah, it was big. Thanks for having me back on, and yeah, anytime that you can continue to progress in a competition like the Champions Cup, it's always a good thing, and especially to do it at home, and now there are a couple of even bigger games coming up down the road, so I'm excited to see what the boys can do moving forward.
Absolutely. Let me just say this. I mean, we all knew that this was going to be a big matchup against Houston, and it was only a one-goal advantage, even though it was still an away goal, still. Everyone had to believe that the Crew needed to score more than a goal in this one to keep their hopes alive and move on to that next round.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think a lot of people, the Crew this year have, I don't want to say struggled to score, but maybe haven't scored as much as they have in the past. So, you know, I'm not totally sure if that's just like a sharpness thing in front of goal because their playing style hasn't changed too much. But I think that's something that I've noticed. A lot of other people who follow the team and cover the team have noticed that they're not necessarily pouring goals in the way that they used to. But on the flip side, they do seem a bit sturdier defensively, so it's kind of like an interesting dynamic that the team has right now. But anytime that you can limit a team to score one goal against you over two games, especially in a competition like that, I think you're going to have a good chance of progressing, especially when you have some of the attacking players that the Crew do. So maybe a different mindset or approach, but certainly work just the same, and I don't think they'll be complaining too much about it now that they've moved on.
Well, let me ask you this, though. What did you think about the start of the match? I mean, I have to admit, it seemed a little bit iffy at times. I mean, I don't know if the Dynamo really threatened, but it looked like there were times that they could have, because it looks like they were dictating the play in that first half.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think even up until the goal, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, I thought that Houston was probably the better team in the first half overall, and certainly had me worried. I'm sure a couple other people watching the game were worried, and Houston is an interesting matchup for the Crew because I think that they are one of the few teams in the MLS, at least, that can keep possession at a similar kind of rate to the Crew and make the Crew defend for long periods of time, which I don't think we're particularly good at this moment. And yeah, they definitely, I thought, were better in the first half right up until the goal, which really kind of comes off of a mistake from I think Mikael is his name on the back line. So yeah, it was a nervy start and not necessarily one that you were wanting to see if you're a Crew fan, but I think they did kind of settle. I thought they were better for most of the second half, but yeah, the start of the game was a nervous one, it looked like to me. Obviously watching and rooting for the Crew.
No, absolutely. And when that goal was scored by Cucho Hernandez, once again, I mean, it had to relax everybody. It had to relax Wilfred Nancy up to a point until he got to the halftime whistle, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody kind of took a deep breath just because I always felt like, and I know we spoke about this last week when we discussed this round, the first goal in the second leg was going to be really important. And if Houston had gotten it, basically any advantage the Crew would have had going into the game would have been gone, and the Crew to get it kind of doubled their advantage in a way. So I think everybody kind of took a collective deep breath when Cucho scored, and to have that, you know, two-goal lead, including the away goal heading into halftime, I think everybody felt much more confident than they did perhaps at the start of the game when it was so nervy, like we said.
Now, in the second half, I mean, look, Columbus got lucky because the goal got taken away on a VAR call, but still, though, did it feel like Wilfred Nancy was kind of parking the bus in the second half, or do you feel like maybe they were trying to attack, but eventually they were just defending no matter what?
Yeah, I think the beginning of the second half, or maybe more so the middle, like the 50th minute to the 65th minute, I thought that they had several chances that probably could have put the game away. Jason Russell Rowe missed a sitter. Nagy missed one that he probably should have done better with. So I think they were at that point kind of going for that third goal, which would have effectively killed it off. And then I think one of the things that Nancy has done with this group, and you can kind of see it even in the playoffs last year, is try and be not necessarily parking the bus, but smarter with the amount of numbers that they're pushing into the attack and smarter with kind of the way that they're attacking. So I would say that that kind of shifted towards the end of the game, knowing that they had that two-goal lead. But, of course, you know, it can be a dangerous game to play, right? You know, if you sit off too deep and too early, then you're inviting the other team to pressure you. So it's kind of an interesting balance and one that has been an interesting evolution that Nancy has had kind of with the crew over the last 6 months or so.
Now, obviously, a goal was scored by Houston. It was off a penalty by Griffin Dorsey. And, of course, the VAR had to take their time to make sure that it was a legitimate handball, or at least a penalty in the area, and it was, and he converted it. And that made it 2-1 on aggregate, 1-1 on the match. And, of course, away goals are now nullified at that point. What were your feelings about that moment, and did you feel, you know, well, you know, they'll probably have to add a couple more minutes to the second half stoppage time with all the review on VAR just to make sure it was
right.
clearly a penalty against the crew?
Yeah, it was a nervous moment, I think, for anybody who's a crew fan or followed the team over the last year. Going back to the Caleb Porter days, the Achilles heel has been giving up goals late in games, especially from winning positions. So to kind of see that one go in and then, you know, your mind starts racing a little bit, and knowing that they're going to have to add time as well for the review and substitutions and all that stuff, I think everybody was certainly on edge. I thought the crew did a good job killing the game off in that, you know, they added time in the second half. But I think, you know, when you see that penalty go in, you realize there's going to be, you know, 4 or 5 more minutes left for Houston to try and find a goal, which would have won it at that point. You know, myself and I'm sure most crew fans were sweating a little bit more than maybe they were before that goal went in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But here's the thing, though. I think he ended the referee exactly at 4 minutes. I mean, I thought
yeah.
he had another minute or two added on because of the VAR review. And you saw, as well as everyone else did, Ben Olsen was not happy that the referee blew his whistle. He went straight to the fourth official to complain about it, but unfortunately, the referee said, nope, that's it, it's over. And did you feel that was a fortunate thing for the crew, or did you feel like, no, that's the end of it, we're done?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Probably the fan in me wanted to be like, oh, no, you know, that's 4 minutes. That's, you know, how it goes. But I think everybody kind of knows that. And Ben Olsen said it in his post-game press conference as well. Like, stoppage time can be a little bit of a crapshoot nowadays, just with the amount that gets added on and then the amount that gets actually played. I think he had a fair point that maybe there should have been another minute or 30 seconds at least in added time in that second leg. But obviously from a fan perspective and a crew perspective, I was happy to see the whistle go.
No, absolutely, and I don't blame you at all. So after the match, what did Wilfred Nancy say to the media, to the Columbus media about it?
Yeah, he didn't say much. I think he, you know, he's happy with the performance, and I think the overwhelming feeling that I got from them was that they're, you know, pleased that they advanced and that they kind of handled this, not rough stretchy games, but like clustered stretch of games pretty well in terms of rotation. And I think he was happy with the performance, happy with what that they went through, and I think that was what they were trying to focus on. I think internally they're going to be talking about finding ways to maybe finish a little bit better, or it just doesn't quite feel like they're firing on all cylinders in the attacking third just yet. So I'm sure that's going to be a big focus for them as they kind of move forward. We play Red Bull this weekend, and then now we're going to play Tigres in the Champions Cup, which I'm sure you'll talk about if you haven't already, which would be an interesting tie. So they have a little bit of time to kind of get that sharpened up, but I would imagine that that's going to be the overwhelming sentiment in the dressing room, is just figuring out a way to maybe be a little bit more lethal and try to go like we were last year.
No, absolutely. I mean, we can talk about that, actually. You know, they handled Orlando very well in their round of 16 matchup, but I have to say this, is that what makes Tigres so dangerous for the Crew that they really got to pay extra close attention against them, because we all know what they can do. I mean, André-Pierre Gignac is one of their amazing, a French striker playing in the Liga MX, and he's just doing amazing things with them, and you know, he's even making them more dangerous than they've ever looked in their past history for the amount of years he's been playing at Liga MX and for Tigres as well. What do you think the Crew has to do to be careful with them, not just at lower.com field, but when you go to the Universitario?
Yeah, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a fascinating two games, and I'm going to be really curious to see how the Crew try and balance it, especially going to Mexico. I mean, the Crew are, the whole sort of game model and strategy and Wilfred Nancy's whole thing is trying to keep possession, and they do that really well against most MLS teams. I'm curious to see how well they can do that against Tigres and Liga MX teams. That's going to be a big thing. If the Crew, and you saw it and we talked about it earlier, the Crew are forced to defend teams for a long period of time, they struggle. So they're going to have to find a way to keep the ball, keep possession, and kind of try and keep Tigres out of that attacking rhythm. So they're, you know, the attackers, the guys that you mentioned and all the other ones can't get into a rhythm and start to threaten the Crew goal. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing. They're going to have to be really compact defensively, and the atmosphere when they go to Tigres is going to be, I would imagine, pretty intimidating and intense. So they got to do a good job of handling that as well. So I haven't watched Tigres a ton, but those are kind of the things that I think, just based off of what I've seen and what I know about, I think we're going to have to be really good in that round, because it's going to be a tough matchup than it would be, I think, for most MLS teams. You know, Tigres is always one of the better teams in Mexico, and because of that, one of the best teams in CONCACAF. So it'll be interesting to see how the Crew stack up. I'm excited and hopeful for it, but yeah, we're gonna have to wait and see. I don't think those matches start till April, so we got a little bit of a break to kind of get ready for them.
No, I can understand that, and believe me, it's going to be a very, very difficult position for the Crew right now, because that is one of the best clubs in all of Liga MX right now. You know, the start of the season so far, you know, for the Crew, it's been pretty good. 7 points in your first three matches, but even though they've had a good start, and they've also had a decent start in this Champions Cup round of 16 as well, is there something in the Crew that worries you? Because I remember the draw, you lost the 3 points late, only had to drop 2 points, I should say, in Minnesota. Is there a little worry with the Crew this year with their start, or do you just feel it's just a slow start at the moment?
I think it's just a slow start. I mean, I think that they're still trying to find their form in front of goal, which would be the thing that worries me, but I also know just kind of that the way that they play and the players they have, they're going to have, you know, chances to score in every single game, and it's just a matter of taking more of those than missing more of them. So I wouldn't say worried. You know, the start of the season is always kind of this time where you're trying to figure out where you stand and, you know, how you can play your best and that sort of thing. So, I mean, the thing I'd say about it actually is a positive is last year in games like this, or games where the Crew maybe didn't finish all their chances or take all their chances very well, they didn't normally come away with 3 points or even a point. A lot of those ended up being losses. So the fact that the Crew are finding a way to win, you know, while still, I wouldn't say playing their best yet, I think is an important thing, especially for a team that is hoping to be at the top of the East and in the conversation for MLS Cup again at the end of this year.
All right, well, Adam, we'll see what happens in the next round. Of course, it's the quarterfinal round, and we'll see what the Columbus Crew will do against Tigres. The hope is they'll advance to the next round and maybe get to that final, but we'll have to wait and see. Thanks for joining me again, and I'll talk to you in the next review show. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thanks. Take care. Thanks for having me on.
And that was Adam Miller from Massive Report as the Columbus Crew advances on 2-1 on aggregate after a 1-1 draw against the Houston Dynamo. So we're going to wrap this up very soon. of course, waiting for my next guest to come on to talk about the Liga MX side of things, and that is, of course, the one and only Charlie Assam from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation, as we will be talking to him very soon, talking about some of these great victories and some of these wonderful matchups involving MLS as well as Liga MX versus Liga MX. Charlie Assam, once again, from FMF State of Mind of SB Nation. Charlie, welcome back, and how are you, sir? How about those games?
Hey, Dan, how's it going? Very exciting set of games that we got to witness over these past, 3 days. Really interesting the way, a couple of them went down. Definitely not expected in terms of, blowouts and another one being, as close as it was. But yeah, really fun to watch in the end.
It really, really was. Let's start off with the Clásico. I mean, you could tell Chivas was embarrassed at the Akron last week. You can tell because they went into the Estadio Azteca and they just came out of nowhere putting in two goals in a span of 20 minutes from Cade Cowell and Ricardo Marin. I couldn't believe what I saw. I'm thinking to myself, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, so I think it was a combination of a couple things. America seemed to me a little bit slow from the start, like a little passive, which I have to say is very, very strange to see, especially from them. If there's one team in Liga MX you can count on to always come out and, put in the exact same effort and always try to go out and get the win, it's America. There's a reason why they are the biggest club in Mexico and have been, since the start of the professional soccer league in Mexico. So they looked a bit passive, looking kind of like, just trying to take some time off the clock and see if it worked, if Chivas kind of looked the same as they did last week, which they didn't. And I think the reason they didn't, and this is the second part of my answer, is I think the fact that Gago decided to start Cowell, as we mentioned last week, I think that made all the difference in the world. Cowell was involved from the start, was involved in play creation, and also, scores the first goal in the 12th minute. So I think it was just such a night and day difference with Cowell in the starting lineup, as opposed to bringing him on as a sub like they did in the first leg.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I mean, what he did, because I remember listening or at least reading on the tweets of Hercules Gomez, of course, from ESPN and Football Americas, that, Cowell got booed really badly in the last game. And then all of a sudden he scores that goal and now he's back on their good graces. It's just amazing
right.
The night and day that happens with Chivas fans when it comes to these players.
Yeah, and that's been an issue with Chivas. They've been a very up and down team. It's something you wouldn't expect to see out of one of your, league bigs, if you will, which I don't consider Chivas to be a big anymore. I think there are at least two or three other teams that have displaced them in that sense. But many continue to consider them as one of a big just because of the huge following they still have from being the only all Mexican player team in the league, but that's what their situation has earned them. But I think they've been unfair to Cowell. I've really appreciated what Cowell has done to this offense, and I remember, Dan, we mentioned it last week, like how could they not go with Cowell from the start? They looked really bad last week, and they did go with him from the start this week. And it was a totally different result,
Mm-hmm. No, it really was. It really was. And you were right. That was a major mistake there from the manager in Gago. I thought that was a major mistake. He never started Cowell in the first leg over at the Akron. Should have. He absolutely should have. Because it would have probably been a lot closer than what it was in this one. And even though, unfortunately, Mozo put the ball in his own net in the 51st minute, but then, helps America gain that advantage. Zendejas, 9 minutes later, makes it 2-2 on the night, 5-2 on aggregate. And then, you know, I'm thinking it's over with. It's dead. That's it. Chivas has got nothing. And then Alvarado does an amazing thing. And 3 minutes later, and he makes it all of a sudden 5-3. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, how much more fireworks are going to have in this? But that would be the last straw, sadly. But still, though, I have to admit with you, Charlie, you know, these Guadalajara Club America matches, man, these Clásicos, they just a faint of heart, man. You cannot have a weak heart with this thing.
Right. Right. And like, I do want to say, after Chivas score that second goal, you notice how Jardine, you know, America's manager, how he tightens the screws a bit. America, they move lines forward. And I just have to say, you know, just giving America credit where credit is due, you know, Fidalgo, what a player on the ball, what quality. And especially, you know, on the second goal, the pass he sends over to, I'm forgetting the name. I apologize for that. But I think the keeper, you know, Chivas keeper ends up stopping it. And then I think it falls into, you know, Valdez's way. And he just points it over to Zendejas, who ends up pushing the ball in for the second goal. But that play is created by Fidalgo. But just the depth he gives America every time he takes the ball. It's just amazing the quality he has on the ball and just continues to prove his importance for this team. And it just seemed to me, I don't know your take on this, Dan, but as soon as America tightened the screws, Chivas looked helpless. That next half hour after Chivas take the 2-0 lead, you know, they don't do much. America tie the game. And then, as you said, Chivas strike back with the third goal. But after that, just never seemed like America were in, you know, any real grave danger again. And then just to top the night off, you know, Chicharito proves how out of rhythm he is. He was a total non-factor again, as he was last week. And he shouldn't, you know, even have been considered to play in this game. He's just not ready yet. And yeah, they just didn't come close again after that third goal.
No, absolutely. The goalkeeper for Guadalajara was Oscar Wally. So
yeah.
Is that who you're – yeah.
Right. Wally, yeah. He came out and made the save, and then, you know, Valdez just pokes the ball over to Zendejas for the second goal. But that play is created by Fidalgo, who ended up, you know, getting involved when the game, you know, when the game needed it most, when America were crying out for it most. He ends up getting involved for that, you know, rough half hour and ends up helping them decide the game for sure.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, like I said, it's not for the faint of heart. You got to be all in or you just got to stay home, because that was just amazing to watch. And I was just really, really entertained with that one. That was just really brilliant. Now, let's go to Tigres and Orlando City. And I really thought Tigres was going to dominate this game. I really thought they did. Great opening goals there from Flores in the 13th minute. Jinak once again was spectacular 7 minutes later. But then Facundo Torres converts a goal in the 24th minute, and I believe that was from the penalty spot. Yes, it was. And
yes.
Did you feel Tigres was a little worried? Because normally they're very dominant at the Universitario.
Yeah, they are, and I think they proved in the end to be dominant again. But I think it was my take on it, Dan, is it was more of just a bad mistake by Gignac to give away. You know, as soon as he converts that second goal, you're thinking like, this is it. And then like 3 minutes later, you turn around and, you know, he shoves the Orlando City player. It was totally unnecessary. I have no idea why he did that. He gives them a goal back and puts them just a goal away from, you know, from clinching a spot in the next round because of the away goal. So yeah, I definitely feel there was a sense of there was a strange sense in the stadium for sure, just because of them giving away a needless goal. You know, there was no need to do that. The game was totally dominated, and all of a sudden, this team who really hadn't done much within those first 20 minutes, they were right back in it and just a goal away from having a spot in the next round.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, of course, that third goal that was scored in the match by Fernando Gorriarán. If I mispronounce his name, which I'm probably doing
Gorriarán.
Already.
Gorriarán.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'll let you do it. But anyway, did you think it was all the way in, that goal? I know it hit off the bottom of the bar. I don't know if the entire ball went completely past the goal line in midair. I thought Galicia kept it out somewhat, but I mean, the VR reviewed it, said it was a goal, but I mean, I don't know. Did you feel it was all the way over the line?
I don't know. They're you know, different angles gave different results to me in my mind. There's an angle. I think it's from in front of the goal. It looks like it's a no doubter, like it's in. But then there's an angle that's taken from behind the goal line, and there it looks like it hits Galicia's hip, and his hip appears to be on the line. So I have no idea, and there's no way to prove this until they actually, install this technology that they use in the Premier League. I don't know, was it called goal line technology? I'm not sure what they call it exactly, but they actually freeze the ball, you know, where it is at the time, and the camera just moves on top of the goal, and you can see exactly where the line is, and that solves everything. I understand it's a very expensive technology, and, you know, there's a whole set of things that go into it. You know, they put a sensor inside the ball and whatnot, but yeah, it's so tough to tell, for sure.
No, absolutely. And then, of course, Cordova, the 81st minute, makes it 4-1. I know Ojeda for Orlando made it 4-2, but that was in second half stoppage time. The game is already over and done with. I know Orlando put a scare in Tigres, but still, though, Tigres does the deed, and they advance 4-2 on aggregate and 4-2 in the second leg after a scoreless first leg, and that was pretty good.
And I just wanted to add, Dan, really quick, if it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel Orlando City lost the series in the first leg. I think they had really key chances to have gone up and just taken that first leg, even if it was just like a 1-0 score. But bringing a lead into the Uni would have been huge. You know, puts a big deal of pressure on Tigres, and any mistake such as, you know, Gignac's, would have really forced their hand a ton because of the away goal, that Orlando City would have eventually scored here in the second leg. So I think they just let a big, big chance slip by not having scored, you know, on one of those many chances they had in the first leg.
Absolutely. And we'll move on next. Monterrey hosting FC Cincinnati. I thought Cincinnati had a good start to the match, especially at the Estadio BBVA. I mean, I know how quickly that stadium became a fortress for Monterrey. I mean, without a doubt, it's a beautiful stadium. I love, even when you see the aerial view and the mountains in the back, in the backdrop, it's just an absolutely gorgeous stadium. And I know why they picked that stadium to be one of the World Cup venues in the in Mexico for 2026, when the tri country hosting is going to be in about 2 years or so. And I thought Romo had a great goal in the 41st minute, late in the first half. Cincinnati tried to stay afloat, and even though Acosta did convert at the restart to make it 1-1, still, though, I thought Monterrey was definitely head and shoulders the better side.
Totally different view than what we got last week from Monterrey. It looked like a much more organized team. Definitely defensively, they tightened a few screws there as well. So credit to manager, Tan Ortiz for doing that. Just to comment on what you mentioned about the stadium, absolutely. This is a very hostile environment when it's a sold-out crowd, as it was yesterday night. It becomes very hostile for the visitors and a very, very tough environment, if not the toughest environment. Maybe close or maybe even a little behind the Azteca in that sense. It's incredibly tough place to play in. And that being said, credit to Cincinnati. I mean, they hung in there. I think they made it tough on Rayados, and especially coming out, as you mentioned, in the second half, you know, within that first minute, that good goal by Acosta, to open the second half, they made it a difficult game, and they gave Rayados a tough time there for a second. And I think, I don't know if Monterrey were expecting that after taking that lead into the half. So credit to Cincinnati for coming into a hostile environment and, you know, going toe-to-toe with a team as tough as Monterrey.
What's your thoughts about Brandon Vazquez since coming over from Cincinnati? I know he scored in both legs against his old team,
yeah.
But how much of a help offensively has he been for Monterrey, Brandon Vazquez?
I think he has been a, you know, much improved version of Funes Mori. You know, Rogelio Funes Mori was let go, and he, you know, eventually signed with Pumas and is now out for the season with an injury. But,
oh, that stinks.
You know, many people were complaining about, you know, don't let Funes Mori go. He's our, you know, all-time leading scorer. But the truth is, I thought that his time was up, you know, at least a couple seasons ago. So at least a year ago, his time at Monterrey was up. He was no longer performing in the key situations you needed him to perform in. And Brandon Vazquez arrives, and not only is he a goal scorer, is he proving to be a goal scorer as Funes Mori was, but he can also move without the ball. You know, he passes the ball great. He has a great passing ability. He has, you know, good size, so he's good, you know, through the air. And he's just proving to be, in my opinion, he's an improved version of Funes Mori up to this point. Now, I do have to say Funes Mori did it, you know, for a much longer period of time, obviously. So we have to see how Vazquez adjusts to the league and whether or not he can be consistent with this performance, of course. But so far, I am greatly appreciating what I'm seeing from Vazquez. And he's proving that he's scoring in important moments as well, which is what you need from a goal scorer.
Now, before we go to the final match, I have to ask you this question, and this does involve Monterrey. What is everyone doing or talking about now that Monterrey will be facing Inter Miami and Lionel Messi in the quarterfinals? What is everyone talking about?
You know, everyone wants to be there. What else? You know, and we mentioned it during the week, Dan. You know, we were messaging back and forth there a couple times, and we mentioned that Messi magic that he brought out to score, you know, their goal midweek and help them move on. So obviously, anyone you talk to, they want to be in the stadium. So that'll be interesting. You know, there aren't as many seats in the BBVA as there are, you know, people living in Monterrey. So it'll be interesting to see how many, you know, how many people can get in the stadium.
Will you be making the trip, Charlie?
I'm going to try and be there. Yeah. Yeah. We have the luck of I have the luck of living in the city. So yeah, I'm definitely going to try and be there for sure.
All right. So it's a hop, skip, and a jump. Good to hear. Good to hear. And hopefully you are successful to get a credential or at least a ticket if you can. Finally, Pachuca, basically with a blowout over the Philadelphia Union 6-0. Solomon Rondon with the hat trick to basically destroy the Union. And then three more by Nelson Diosa Suarez, Usama Idrissi, and Alan Bautista, they put in their tallies. What did you make of that one? And did you think it would have been that easy to take down the Union like that?
In all honesty, Dan, I did expect this result. I did. After what we saw in the first leg, and we also mentioned it last week, you know, Philadelphia were very lucky last week. I mean, let alone to come out, you know, with a tie. I mean, they were just lucky to not have been, you know, blown out last week. Pachuca, you know, let at least four or five good chances go by. and three of them from Eric Sanchez. He was the villain last week, and had Philadelphia moved on to the next round, he would have been the one to blame for his three wide open blunders that he had last week. So he has to be the most relieved player in Pachuca for sure. But just my quick take on the game, I thought Philadelphia did a great job last week of keeping Salomon Rondon in check. If there's one Pachuca player they didn't allow any space, it was Rondon. And it seems like they said, Pachuca still managed to create a ton of chances against us, so maybe we should try and focus on other players as well, and maybe we can ease up on Rondon a little bit. And what ended up happening is Rondon was afforded tons of space and lanes. He ends up scoring, the first three goals. And then there are two disallowed goals from Pachuca, which I believe Rondon would have had assists on. So he was involved in nearly five goals. So that's just the Rondon effect, and that's the quality he brings to this club, and that's everything they were hoping to get out of him when they signed him.
Yep. No, absolutely. It's going to be really, really fun and really interesting what's going to happen here as we move on. And Tigres will take on the Columbus Crew in the quarterfinals. Club America will take on the Revolution in the quarterfinals. And Pachuca is going to take on the Herediano from Costa Rica in the quarterfinals. So we got some pretty good matchups here in the quarterfinals, Charlie. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen next month. And listen, I know you're going to join me again next month. Thank you again, as always, for doing these review shows involving Liga MX, and I hope to have you on again next month.
Appreciate it, Dan. Looking forward to it. Great speaking to you again, too.
Great speaking to you as well, Charlie. Thank you once again. Charlie Assam, FMF State of Mind of SB Nation, joining us, talking about those clubs in Liga MX in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. I want to thank my guests tonight once again, Sam Minton, Blazing Musket, Matt Ralph, Philadelphia Soccer Now, Peter Brown, Football Miami TV, Derek Stowers, Bayou City Soccer, Adam Miller, Massive Report, and once again, Charlie Assam, FMF State of Mind of SB Nation. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Join me this coming Sunday night as we'll preview the Open Cup first round teams in the National Premier Soccer League. The NPSL Soccer Show is back, as we will preview the Open Cup games in round one by those eight sides. And then another regular Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show this coming Monday night. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Take care, so long, and have a good night. Bye-bye for now. Have a good night, everybody.